Jabs has kindly brought some cookies, which we are eating, and we're going to discuss creativity. Hey, people listening, I'm Will Small.
And I'm Nathan Seal.
And who are you?
I'm John Blois.
Is that how your name is pronounced?
No, it's pronounced way more French than that.
Can you pronounce it?
Wait, so that's John Blois? I can't really.
Yeah, that's not bad.
So it's not close John enough? Blois.
I say Blois because it's a bit easier for the normal non-fluent French-speaking person to say.
That's a French last name.
Yeah, and I'm not French, so I can't pronounce it properly, but I have heard...
some French heritage somewhere.
My father's English, and it sort of comes from that side, but further back, so he's not French either. But someone must have
been
French.
You should just own it. You should just own it and just...
I should.
Hey, I'm John Bleu.
Unfortunately, I learned Spanish at school instead of French. If I learned French, I could have tried to pull it off.
How would a Spanish person pronounce your last name?
yeah. I've got no idea.
Well, I know you as Jabs.
Jabs, yeah. So most people just call me Jabs.
Yeah.
Which is not French.
Is your middle name... Does your middle name start with A?
No.
Okay.
No.
Jabs is easier to say than Blois.
Yeah. Blois. Well, you can say Jabs, yeah.
So
yeah.
As we need to get to know you.
Mm.
So we know your name now. We know that there's some cultural confusion in your name.
I suppose, yeah. I only say that I don't pronounce it right because I've heard French people say it, and they say it really well.
Did it sound... beautiful.
It does. Everything they say sounds beautiful.
Oh, man. I remember when I went to Paris and the first time I walked into a little patisserie and got something, the girl just behind the counter said, I don't know, she probably said the croissant is $2.50.
Yeah.
But it was the most beautiful thing my ears had ever heard. Say it again.
There's actually a French patisserie near our place. And
is it owned by the Bleus?
No, it's not. But I went there with my wife, and the girl behind the counter asked me what I wanted to buy, and I bought like a French stick. I bought like what are those little burger looking things that are the dessert?
Oh,
things? What are they called? I want to call
a macaron.
Macaron, yeah. I bought a bunch of macarons.
And just, pronunciation of that.
Yeah, and Leanne's like, you need to not go back to that store because she just every time she opens her mouth, you just buy everything in the store.
Yeah.
Funny.
Okay, so I know you as Jabs. Where does that name come from? Does that describe a different part of your persona?
Not really. It was everyone called me JB when I was little. And because John, I was named after my grandfather. So I suppose, and a little kid called John is really...
it's weird, right?
It is weird, right? It's not a little kid's name. And so I don't think I grew into John until... I might not still not be grown into John. But yeah, everyone called me JB. And then... you know, a little friend of mine just called me Jabs. Just that's how it happened.
Like when you were a kid?
Yeah, when I was really little. I've been
like
Jabs.
A lifelong nickname.
Yeah, my whole family calls me Jabs. Most people call me Jabs.
Wow. So yeah. I thought that was kind of like your MC name.
No, it wasn't even my MC name for ages. Do you know what my MC name was for ages?
Long John.
Yeah, Long John. Until people started just calling me like Long John in general conversation, introducing me as that. And I was like, that's really weird to just call me that. It just sounds a bit wrong. And so I was just like, look, let's just ditch it.
Yeah, all right. So for the people listening, they now have three variations on your name, but they don't know who you are. Well, maybe they do. Maybe they do because you got some fame in some circles.
Maybe.
But give us a snapshot. Who are you?
I don't know how I would define myself. Maybe as a disciple. Huh?
Hey.
Yeah,
someone
so
to a
who are you? Who are you a disciple of?
Of Jesus, yes.
Okay, that's important.
I'm a follower
important
of Jesus.
To clarify,
yeah,
you can be a
right.
disciple of anything.
Yeah,
disciple of Will Small.
Yeah, well,
yeah,
it's getting there.
Follow
it's
me.
Getting,
while
the longer
me.
His hair grows, the more disciple-y I become. Is that a word, disciple-y? Yeah. So I don't know how to put myself into a package.
I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. Okay. I am an MC, a rapper, although I do a little bit less of it now. From a group called Bayside Records, which is myself and DJ Bobby Digital. You may have heard of us.
I can't say that. I've heard of them before.
Nathan, the great humbler. Yeah. And so, so I've been involved in Musicians Making a Difference, which Will is involved in a fair bit. So we've worked with them a fair bit, but also we did gigs for, you know, 10 years ago, actually 10 years since we did our first gig. You really haven't heard of us? I'm sure you must have. All right. That's fine.
It sounds, Bayside Records to me just sounds like it should be an epically famous crew. It's such a good name.
Yeah, you reckon? Yeah.
I love it.
Or a Smash Repair.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking to my dad the other day about where I came up with the name, because actually a week, for the last year we moved to the Shire a year ago. The week that we moved there, a whole group of councils around where I grew up and where I lived the whole time that we were doing Bayside Wreckers changed their name to Bayside Council. So they all merged and now they call themselves Bayside Council. And my mate who works for the council called me up and said, hey, did you see the councils all just merged and called themselves Bayside Council? And I said, yeah, it's funny that, because I just moved away from, like, just out of Bayside Council right now. So, but yeah, I was talking to my dad about that and he said, oh, I thought you got the name from back in the day. Like, you used to go Smash Repairs or whatever near our place. I think it was in Botany in Sydney. I'm from Sydney, by the way. So, yeah, and he figured I just got the name from that, which I probably subconsciously did.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So you're a disciple of Jesus. You're an MC.
Yeah. I'm also quite involved in Crosswords as well, which is a hip hop ministry based down in Sydney, but has links all over the country and internationally. Mm. I'm also an AV guy. So I do audio visual at a private school in Sydney.
And you're amazed by our studio setup. You're blown away.
I'll get to that later. I'll get to that later. I'll tell you how I feel about it. But yeah, I also, just before we recorded this podcast, I recorded my own podcast with Will as a special guest, and I've also done other podcasts. I did one with Oakbridge from Crosswords called the KW10 podcast, where we basically played 10 Christian hip hop songs each episode, and we never ran out. It wasn't that we ran out of songs. It was that we ran out of time to keep making it.
Time. Yep. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Steam and time.
Yep.
The time steam. Ratio thing just
Well, your podcast is cool. Do you want to give that a quick plug? Anyone listening, where can they check it out?
Yeah, okay. So it's called Time and Motion Cardio Sessions Podcast, which the whole idea of it, which Nathan asked about this before, but I said, no, I'm going to explain it to you on air live. So the last Bayside Wreckers release that happened is called Cardio, which is sort of things from the heart, love songs and sort of things like passion and things like that. And what I did in the creating of that, which started probably 3-ish years ago, probably just over 2 really, I wrote these songs. I recorded them, with a mate down in Melbourne, and then there were too many for me to release. So I actually sent out the rough demos of them to a bunch of friends, including Will, to just sort of get their feelings on them and what they thought about them, to sort of work out what ones are worth pursuing in that way, and just sort of try and get a few ideas from respected peers about what they thought about the songs. And I got really good feedback, not in terms of they all said that they were all great songs, but it was just really good constructive feedback on it. And at the time I was sort of listening to a lot of podcasts and I thought, hey, this would make for a really good podcast, just interviewing each of these people. And so that's sort of where the podcast stemmed from. So, I interviewed Will.
Yeah, so it's actually your podcast is like tearing back a little curtain into the interior world of the music, the creator, the artist, and in a sense that's going to lead into like our topic for today. We thought on Art of Conversation with someone like yourself, it'd be good to chat about the creative process and what does it mean to be creative and to look at that, you know, more, you know, down to earth, messy way than a glorified, oh, so creative.
Yeah.
And talk about how does that interact with being a person of Christian faith as a disciple of Jesus? How do we think about creativity? Where does it fit? And, where do we get inspiration and what happens when we can't find it anywhere and we're dry and blah, blah, blah. So that's what we're going to talk about a little bit later.
Mm.
But good to get to know you a little bit.
Yeah.
How about you just tell us a couple more things? I'm going to ask you a question and then Nathan's going to ask you a question.
Are you guys doing the good guy, bad guy routine? Who gets to be the bad guy? Who's the good guy? A good cop, bad cop routine, I mean.
This is the first I heard about.
I'm putting Nathan on the spot. That's why I'm going to ask a question first so that you have time to think of a question.
You're going to have the follow-up question.
Okay. My question is, tell us a little bit about your family.
Mm-hmm.
You have offspring?
Yeah, so me and my wife, Leanne, have a 2-year-old called Will. This is why you're asking me, isn't it?
I just want to name you. That'd be great.
His name is Will. Will B. Whatever Will B. Will B.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, that's pretty catchy. He'll use that later on. Or maybe he'll just choose to go with a different name. So he, yeah, he's two and he's a very fun age, as you'd know, because Noah's around the same, the same age. And he's hilarious and, he takes up a lot of our time now. And so creatively, I probably haven't been as productive in the last 2 years.
But then you did, you know, you contributed to the making of like a new set of like lungs and a heart and like arms and legs and a brain. Like
you could be my greatest creation.
Yeah. I try and look at it that way.
I can only take so much credit for it though.
Yeah.
Let's not go into the creation of children. I think everyone knows pretty much how that works. So yeah, so I've been married to Leanne. Next year will be 10 years, but we've been together for a bit longer than that. Yeah, I grew up in Sydney, but my grandmother lives on the Central Coast who I come up and visit regularly, and I've got a lot of friends on the coast too, so I spend a lot of time up here. How deep do you want me to go with my family?
I think that's good.
Family,
I think,
medical history.
I mean, we know that you've got some French somewhere back in there and it's English.
Yeah, from my dad's side, he's English.
I think we just want to know enough details so we can get into like online accounts, like security questions.
Okay, cool. BSB,
Is that your question, Nathan? Like what's your credit card detail?
Yeah, I'll have to pull it out, but I'm happy to give you whatever information you need for the podcast. Yeah.
I would love a quirky question if you've got one.
My question is, what's your favorite type of cheese?
That's a good question, and I probably won't give you a simple answer to it.
It's not a simple question.
It's not. It demands a bit of thought, and
I want to know not just the type of cheese, but like the way of eating it.
The way of eating it. Yeah, no, good. That's great. So, I mean, I do love just, you know, a tasty cheese just on a cracker. You know, maybe a bit of Cabanossi involved in there, or a bit of salami. That sort of thing.
So you think cheese that relies on something else?
I don't think tasty cheese necessarily relies on something else, but I like to combine everything together anyway. But I do like, and I always confuse the two of these, brie and camembert. They're in the same cheese family, aren't they?
Yeah. Easily confusable.
So I like the one that's tastier, whichever one that is. Which one's creamier? Which one tastier? Yeah.
Well, I know you can get...
Will seems to be more confident in his cheese knowledge than you, Nathan.
I think with both of those cheeses, you can get double and triple.
Yeah.
It's a triple brie.
Whatever the case, when I see a white coating on a cheese and you can cut it into little sections and chuck that on a Jats, I get pretty excited. So I'd say that rather than just the boring, tasty cheese.
Good answer. It tells us a lot about you.
Yeah.
It tells us that you are not... a foodie.
No. No, I'm not. I would definitely not consider myself a foodie, but I do love food.
Yeah.
But I'm not that adventurous.
Yeah.
Like, sure. I'm a good burger guy rather than a...
Would have been a...
No. I don't like the cheese to be too full on either.
Yeah, okay. You don't like blue cheese?
I would try it.
Do you like John Bleu cheese?
Not really. I'm not very French. That's how cheesy I am.
All right, cool. Well, we're gonna do... something we like to do on Art of Conversation. We're each going to review something.
Mm.
And
cool.
Then we're going to talk about creativity.
Yep.
Nathan, I would like you to be the first reviewer today.
So I was thinking of reviewing a state youth camp that I went on this past weekend, at the time of recording at least anyway. So yes, this last weekend I was at a youth camp thing that was sort of run by Baptist church people, but I guess that they're open to other people coming along as well, but I think it was mostly Baptists, which is sort of like a gathering of lots of youth groups around the state to come to one location and have 3 days or something of a youth camp, staying in tents and doing youth campy type stuff that normally involves like games and singing and speaking and getting completely exhausted.
Mm. So it was intense.
It was intense, and it was also very intense.
Yeah, great.
The weather was quite intense.
Yes, it was very windy, especially one of the nights.
And very hot too, right?
Yes, it was also very hot. Anyway, so my experience at the camp was probably a little bit different from what I've normally had at youth camps, because at this particular youth camp, I managed to get roped into helping out in the kitchen for pretty much the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
So that was sort of what I was mainly doing is I know nothing about cooking, but somehow I ended up in the kitchen and we made a lot of food.
This could mean that the reviews the kids give the camp could be totally altered.
Yeah. Because
food's a big part of the camp experience.
Yeah.
So you're just reviewing cooking at a camp, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And they're now reviewing food.
But yeah, I experienced some other parts of the camp as well, but my main job there was, yeah, helping out in the kitchen, which is something very new to me. I've never made that much mashed potato in my life. I think we had about 50 kilos of potatoes.
Wow.
We had to cut them all up. Wow. And
it's a lot of kilos.
It's like you were in the army or something.
Yes. It was a lot of potatoes and a lot of pretty much everything we were cooking, in fact.
Did you have a comical-sized potato masher?
It wasn't particularly larger than a regular-sized potato masher, I don't think. I don't think – like, a larger potato masher is not going to help you very much. We had a very big pot that we were mashing the potatoes in.
Yeah, it will.
And, like, you really had to mash it, you sort of had to use, like, both arms and, like, you had the pot on the ground and just, like, really going for it.
That's pretty comical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a bit more than just a
normal potato masher.
Yeah, like, pots like
this. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, it's good.
And on the ground, mashing it.
Yeah, so that was fun. Let's see, what else do I have to say about the camp? Yeah, pretty much I was cooking food the whole time. That's all
I had. You didn't even sound like you were cooking food the whole time.
But other than that, I think that there was a lot of other food other than the mashed potatoes as well. But I think my views on the camp overall was that it was reasonably well run. And I think that it was set up to be a camp that would be really good for people to go to if they've got a youth group that is going and
lots of youth groups go on their own little camp, but I guess this was about bringing together people from, some of them would only have like 5 kids, right?
Like, yeah. So they get to come to it allowed, camp, say, it allowed smaller groups to come to a larger camp and experience a bit of community with all the other youth groups there. Cause I don't know, the way the camp was set up was sort of each individual youth group would come along with their youth leaders and their youth.
Mm.
And those youth leaders would sort of keep an eye out for the youth that they're bringing along, but they can just go to the camp and those youth leaders, their main focus is on their youth. Then the few volunteers then running the camp, of which I was sort of one of them kind of thing, we would run most of the logistics of the camp so that youth leaders from those different youth groups don't have to worry about it. They just come along and have a great time with their youth.
That's a good system.
And they don't have to worry about like organizing food and figuring out locations and all that type of stuff.
It's just
all done for them.
Yeah, cool.
So yeah, overall rating, 4 out of 5 stars.
4 out of 5 stars for mashing a lot of potato.
Imagine if you weren't just mashing potato the whole time and you got the full breadth of what the camp involves. You might have even got more.
Yeah, it's an impressive number.
Mm.
4.
Yeah, I'm reviewing the camp in general, not just like...
Compared to Jesus, though, what would you give it?
That'd be a pretty easy answer, but
yeah,
I think we'll keep it at 4 stars.
Fair enough.
If Lewis is listening, he's just feeling extra hurt by that, I'm sure, based on previous reviews that got the comparative review.
Yeah, that's tough.
All right, Jabs.
I'll go the next one.
You will go the next one.
Okay, so I thought I would do the ultimate review for this podcast, meaning I'm going to review the podcast on the podcast.
This specific podcast. You're going to review podcast. Out of conversation.
See, I feel I've listened to every episode, all right?
Congratulations.
Only me and Nathan's mother have done that, as far as we know. Is that right?
Well, we don't know for sure.
Yeah.
We have. Really know.
Yeah.
We have listeners.
Yeah, you got avid listeners, and I am one of them.
We have many listeners.
Even though I wouldn't even know that I'm actually your target audience, really. I don't think I'm young.
I'm over
30.
Why have you listened to every episode?
Probably because you told me about it. And I'll get into what I like about the podcast, but also, you know, I've made podcasts. I listen to a lot of podcasts, so I think I'm pretty well qualified to review it. Wouldn't you say?
I think so.
Yeah. If anyone's going to review it, it's got to be someone who makes podcasts, listens to podcasts.
Yep.
And listens to your podcast. Because that's essential to review something. You got to listen to it. If there's one thing I know about reviews.
Mm. A lot of people don't, though. Do that. They review things they have not read or listened to fully.
I do wonder when an album first comes out and someone does an album review of it, how, like, sometimes an album doesn't hit until, like, you've listened to it multiple times. How does, anyway, this is my first time doing a review, so I don't have to worry about them. But I've listened to you guys a lot. So let me first say, you've got a great mix of youth and experience, all right? I feel that you both have really important roles in the podcast. Will is the old wisdom and the formal training in ministry and all this experience that's gone with his study and everything. Nathan is very inquisitive. In fact, I think you nail basically what the target audience for the podcast is. So in some ways, you play the listener as well, you know, in the topics that you're covering. I know on the KW10 podcast that I did with Oaks, he was this, he's like a Christian hip hop historian. He knows everything there is to know. He's the massive geek on it. And I've really not listened to that much Christian hip hop apart from sort of what I've been exposed to over the years at Crosswords. I don't really seek it out. I haven't delved deep into its history. So he would play a song. I would ask him the questions about who the person is.
Right.
He would have the info. I would be chiming in on sort of, you know, the questions that I guess people would want to know. So I wasn't afraid to know those questions because I didn't know. Also, Nathan, you're often the devil's advocate, which I think is important because when you have a conversation, you don't want to both agree on things. Even if it isn't necessarily a question that you have, I think you ask the questions anyway to try and get the conversation a bit deeper, and you're happy to switch sides for the sake of let's ask that because people ask these questions and it's not as simple as just statements. I like that the format is very simple. It's very easy to follow. I know it's coming and it makes for good conversation too because the topic sort of takes the importance in the whole thing. I like that it starts with the reviews, which are fun and it's an easy way to get into it because often, you know, when you're reviewing bananas or something, which is a great thing to review. Was that you that reviewed the banana?
That was Lewis.
No,
it was Lewis. It was Lewis reviewed the banana. There you go. You know, it's a simple thing that everyone knows and they probably have the same feelings about it or different feelings, but it's a great conversation. But it's also pretty light because you can get pretty deep with some other things later on, but it's a good way to start to ease into it. Also, heaps of the things that you've reviewed, especially you, Will, because I guess you're at a similar stage of life as me with kids, like traveling with a baby.
Mm.
But you did that just after I'd traveled with a baby, so I was like, yes, I understand all of this. Even the op shop as well, like
come on.
Some of the things that we do with op shops, like every time we go to some small town, I'm just like, we've got to go to the op shop because I've got to find some random record there that yes. I haven't even got my record player set up anymore. But I'm like, you buy a record just based on the name of it or, you know.
The album art,
anything, just because it's like, cool, I can get something from there just to remember that place by or whatever. And it doesn't cost you much either, so there's not much risk involved. So that's, anyway, I'm not trying to review op shops now. And even when you guys were talking about Screwtape a couple of weeks ago, did you review Screwtape letters?
Yes. Yeah. I think so.
It was the same week that we were doing Ephesians at church and like in my home group, we were talking about it. I listened to your podcast and I happened to be listening to it. It was even like the same day the Screwtape kept popping up and I haven't read it in years. I actually borrowed the book off a mate years ago. And I still haven't given it back to him. Now it's like a running joke that it's actually now mine and he needs to borrow it back off me together. But, yeah, it's just funny how things pop up and it's like, oh, I know that, you know, and so I'm in on the review, you know, process. I love it. And then you move on to your things that you learn. Gets a bit deeper, often hits a spiritual spot if you're learning something at uni or you're learning about something just in your own growth. So that's sort of another way of sort of easing into this heavier conversation. And then the topic conversation is good in the context of a podcast as well because as a listener, I just have to listen to it rather than talk and engage in the conversation, which is what I think a lot of modern conversations lack because everybody wants to get their word in. And I don't get to do that. I just get to listen to you guys covering the topic and I have to think about it and think about it after that and not necessarily talking about it. I'm just experiencing a conversation. So that's a good lesson for me because I'm always trying to add to conversations, as you'll see today, but I don't often get the opportunity until now. Now you're in trouble. I'm going to be...
Maybe this episode will be worse then for you because
maybe.
You'll actually have to talk.
That's right, but I'm looking forward to it. Your guests on that note are always on point, maybe until this episode. It helps that I think at least one of you normally knows them already, if not both of you. But here's a question. How would you go with guests that you don't know? Might be interesting in the future.
That's an interesting question.
Yeah. Let's get to audio quality, okay?
All right, here we go.
yes, it is a bit echoey, but that's me being a picky sound guy who, you know, has to get things right. But I think... the practicality of the way you record way outweighs the quality because it's not like it's unlistenable. It's very listenable. But also the fact that we're sitting around having a microphone rather than all have headphones, all have microphones like we were just doing. It's simple to set up. It's simple to get going. When you're bringing people in to talk to and have conversations with, they might not be used to the recording process. So... they don't have to worry about that. All they have to do is sit there and chat to you. So that's all very important, and I do appreciate that because my recording process is like two microphones into an interface, headphones, and I'm recording in a program that's pretty complicated. I also need as many microphones as I have people, so I couldn't do it with three. I don't have that many inputs. So you could technically have a conversation of eight people. Nine people.
Wow.
That would be a pretty hectic conversation.
10 people. Imagine that. So, you know, it opens you up to a lot of things. So I don't really have any problem with your audio quality. I think it's really good. And I never even think, oh, what are they doing with it? It's just, it always sounds really good. So props to Blue Microphones. Mm. That's what they're for.
The Blue Yeti.
Nice. Yeah, so I go overkill with mine, and seeing this process makes me think, wow, I don't need to do that. But I don't have a Blue Yeti. I'm not as resourced as you having the microphone. So my one criticism, though.
Come on.
Which can be a criticism and also not necessarily. It's not an easy listen all the time. It starts very easy, but there's some deep conversations going, and I'm not always in the mood for that when I'm just driving to work. Sometimes I do just need to zone out. And not be challenged or have to listen to something because I don't really want to miss what you're saying either. I can't just put it on in the background. But, yeah, that's a good thing in terms of what you're trying to do and you're trying to actually provoke a bit of thought and stuff like that. I never regret actually listening when I am in the mood and I do have the time and I listen to it. I feel like it's a podcast that's good for my soul.
Oof.
How about that? Yeah, I feel like I'm improved as a result.
That is going on the website in quotation marks.
This podcast.
A podcast is good for my soul.
And it can be good for your soul.
Yes.
I just pointed at the Yeti.
Could you go on iTunes and type that in?
Yeah, I should do that. I'm really bad with asking people to do reviews and stuff, but apparently they're quite important, aren't they?
You're the first person I've asked.
Yeah?
I don't think we have any. I mean, do we? I don't know.
I've tried to review things on iTunes before, and I find it really hard to... It's not an easy process. You got to really want to do it.
How did you find the process of reviewing this podcast on this podcast? Could you review that?
Pretty easy. I mean, the main roadblock would have been if you guys said, no, I don't think you should do that. It's a bit naff. Is that a word you'd use?
We're all about the meta.
Yeah, I wasn't worried that you wouldn't want me to do it. I figured you'd be into it because you are quite meta. And like some of the reviews that you guys have had, it's sort of like, okay, I think this one can probably fly.
Anything's on the table.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm always happy with very meta.
Yeah, yeah. You're okay. A meta guy.
Are you up to the star rating?
Yep, the star rating. I haven't actually written the star rating down, but I have thought about it. I'm going to give your podcast a 4.25. You're definitely better than a 4. Yeah, I don't know what podcast I have that I would give a high rating, but maybe something with like massive production values and stuff. But I don't think yours needs any better production values. But maybe
those guys are just overproduced and
they are.
Stuff.
They got too much time on their hands.
That takes them away.
Yeah,
And then you're just like, these guys are reading off a script. And
yeah. And I do.
It's like feeling there.
That's right. Well, sometimes. Let's not be too harsh on them. You know, we don't even know who this, you know, this podcast that we're talking about is. But I think, you know, a theme song would be good for you.
Oh, yeah.
Some sort of little jingle. I do like your stings. Your.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Can we just put one in right here?
Oh, yeah, that's Nathan. Yeah. It's all Nathan.
I think I need stings, so I need to. That's something that I've learned from that I need it. But you got stings. You need some
theme music
could be good. That's what they. Well, that's like the radio.
Okay.
Or like in television, you know, when they get like the band to sort of play.
Yeah.
I just call it the scene transition music.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what it's
the
called.
STM.
And it's just the like random bit of audio I could generate on my computer.
Yeah.
That didn't sound.
Isn't it like it's pretty meta? Because it's like you typing out of conversation or something like that.
Yeah, it's like a generated like phone dialing noise.
Yeah.
That then like, I forget what words actually put in it. It's something like podcast or something.
Right.
And then I think I sped it up and whatever. And
okay. I figured it was just some stuff.
I mean, as a long time listener, thing. I'm sure you would have figured that out by now.
Yeah.
I can obviously tell that there's a hidden message in that.
I knew I should have gone deeper with my listening. Yeah, well, hey, but that's cool. That's a really cool bit of information for me.
I actually think it says like lunch podcast or something because at the time we were thinking of
the original concept was that we would just have lunch.
And pizzas. And wasn't there pizzas? I remember you put up a picture of a bunch of pizzas. You guys were eating pizza.
I don't think we did do a recording of like eating some pizza and having a chat, but I think that was like episode minus one.
Yeah. I did an episode minus one with mates that we were going to do like a footy, like NRL podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We're eating pizzas, but like I had a mate listen to it and he said, mate, you guys were just chewing through the whole thing.
He reviewed it.
Yeah.
And it was
a mate sort of reviewed it. He gave me a bit of feedback. Yeah.
-4.25.
Yeah. He said, you'd have to redo it like without you guys chewing so much. Like eating pizzas and drinking beers is not, it's not that conducive. Although for a footy podcast, you'd sort of, maybe you would get away with it, but. It doesn't sound good, yeah. But you guys sound good.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for that generous review.
All good.
Hopefully, it will reach many people somehow that haven't listened to the podcast yet.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure how that works.
Maybe we can transcribe it and then put that as
listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
But if you know...
It's just a bit of positive reinforcement for you
guys. It's good. Thank you.
If any listeners feel like reviewing the podcast as well, you can do so on iTunes and give it a star rating and we'll see what we get. We'll have to try and get 4.25 now.
Yeah.
Which means we need some people to give it a 5 and then...
Other people
to want most people to give it a 5 and then if you're just one of the haters,
you can give it
a 1 star.
Mm.
And
well, it wouldn't even have to be a hater. You just have one person who compares the podcast in comparison with Jesus. Everyone else compares it in the traditional.
That's right.
You know, you just compare it in comparison to itself kind of vibe.
Yeah. And let's face it, it's probably going to be you that will compare it.
You'll
Jesus.
Give it a 1 star.
I think we just ask everyone to give it a five.
Just give it a 5. And then
mathematically, you'll work out what you need to get it lower than the average, down to the
4.25, we can find a couple people to
give it a one star. We like reviews. We do them every time. We've done 12 episodes, which means we've, you know, had somewhere in the range of 30-something reviews.
Mm.
So, yeah. Okay, my turn. My turn to review something. I was considering being just next level meta and reviewing your review of our podcast on our podcast.
Yeah.
But I don't think I will. But maybe I should.
Depends what the other option is.
Yeah, what is the other option?
The other option is, can you review a book that you haven't finished?
You can review the part that you've already read.
So I'm about halfway through a book by a guy named N.T. Wright. Have you guys heard of N.T. Wright? He's the man.
I have heard of this guy.
So he is a...
He has the two initials followed by his name, which always makes you
always implies greatness, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, N.T. Wright, he is a theologian. His main area is sort of New Testament scholarship. He's a bit of an expert on going back to...
Does N.T. stand for New Testament, right?
Well, yeah, he gets the New Testament right, surely.
Gosh.
Wow, I had never thought of that.
Wow.
But N.T. Wright gets the N.T., right? Hey, anyway, N.T. Wright has written a book called The Day the Revolution Began. He's written a number of books. He's written like 1,000 books. Mm. But The Day the Revolution Began, I'm pretty sure it's his most recent book, came out last year. And it is a book. The subtitle is Rethinking the Meaning of Jesus' Crucifixion. And basically, in the half of the book that I've read, he's making an argument that the majority of modern Christianity has been incredibly simplified to basically a message of, you know, the problem is that he would say that we have made the problem just failing a moral test, like a school student. God set us a moral test, which we've all failed. And the solution is that we would go to heaven. And somehow in the middle of those two things is Jesus on the cross. And he's like, broadly speaking, this is, you know, a caricature of modern Christianity. Mm. And he's like, but actually, if you look through the whole Bible and you look at all of the expectation of the Jewish people in the Old Testament and all of the things that had happened, you know, the Passover and the kind of like the way that God has interacted with Israel, and then you look at how the early New Testament guys like Paul and other guys who wrote the New Testament, how they understood and interpreted Jesus' death, it was way more revolutionary. And to put it in a nutshell, he then reframes those two things, the problem and the kind of solution. He says the problem is not just that we failed a moral test. The problem is that God gave humanity a vocation of bearing the image of God and being his representatives on earth. So it's like this, you know, kind of grand picture of humanity. And so what we failed was not just, you know, to like, we didn't just fail like a couple of, random little items on a test, but we failed to be who we were made to be. And then he says, then what, Jesus comes to do is not just to take people to heaven, but to bring, heaven and earth back together, what has been fractured, to bring it back together and to help us to become fully human and to bear that vocation fully. Anyway, I'm only halfway through the book. I'm loving it.
you sound like you're pretty deep into the book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And look, you at least know what the book's going for.
My review would be that N.T. Wright is an academic and a scholar who can write in a way that you don't have to be an academic or a scholar to appreciate. You know, a lot of the time, academic work is really restricted to only being read by other academics. So part of what I love about this guy is he writes books that are for, you know, there's some of it that's a little bit dense, but the average person who is not an academic can definitely approach the material, and that's his heart. He wants to write to help, you know, just everyday people understand their faith in a more deep way, and to understand, yeah, really what the writers of the Bible were trying to get at, and some of the things that maybe we've kind of lost a little bit with. Trying to, you know, living in an age in particular where we want things to be quite simple. We've lost some of the beauty and complexity and depth to the story. So having only read half the book, it doesn't really matter what he does in the second half of the book. He's done a good enough job with the first half that I am going to give The Day the Revolution Began. I mean, look, okay, he may do something crazy in the second half of the book that totally goes back on all of that.
But wrong.
Unlikely. I'm going to give... The Day the Revolution Began, 4.5 out of 5, because it is, the reason being, it's taking stuff that I've heard all my life and I'm reading it and understanding it as if it's the first time. And suddenly because you kind of ask questions, you know, why is the death of Jesus? You couldn't blame someone for asking, why is that the central thing in Christianity? Mm. It seems very weird. What difference does it make? What does some dude dying a couple thousand years ago have to do with me today? Or how does that bring about the forgiveness of sins? Mm. It just seems very strange. And he really gets into that. So great book. And you know, he would say that for the original disciples, they saw that act with so much meaning, so much political meaning, like what it meant for him to be crucified in Rome, under a Roman government, not in Rome. What it meant to be, like, crucified in the time of Roman rule is sort of what I meant. yeah, so much meaning in that, so much meaning in terms of him coming to become a king and then being a crucified king. But anyway, trying to condense a lot here into a short review. Just go read the book. How the revolution began, or the day the revolution began, will revolutionize your understanding of these significant events.
So what do you reckon he could put in the last half of the book that would, like, radically change the review? Do you reckon? Like, you only read half of it. What if
change it for the better or change it for the worse?
What happens if the last half of the book, you just said something totally crazy?
Well, let's just say you've given the first half of the book 4.5.
He's like, and now the way we live this out is we watch Teletubbies all day. And you'd be like, what?
You know, my feeling about the second half of the book is I'm kind of like, wow, there's so much good stuff here, but how can he keep up this kind of momentum and, like, mind-blowing revelation for another half a book? It's kind of like you watch The Matrix and then you watch the second and third Matrix movies and you're like, they couldn't keep it up. Started out really good.
Mm.
And I'm generous to the second and third Matrix movies more so than most people.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's a certain amount of momentum going here that, gee, N.T. Wright, can you keep it up? There's a lot more pages in this bad boy. Did you need to write them all?
Are you doubting N.T. Wright?
No, I'm not doubting. I'm just saying he's got his work cut out for him in that regard.
Yeah.
It's already been pretty mind-blowing.
Mm, right. Well, actually, to simplify what he's talking about as well is something that we constantly need to be reminding ourselves anyway, that it is all about the cross and it is all about Jesus, because especially with trying to evangelize people, you need to remember, until they believe that, until they believe that he is God and that he did die for us and he is the only way, any other argument you try and put forward is not going to stick for anyone. None of it matters if not for those things.
Mm.
And that's like something I just, every 6 months or something happens and I'm like, man, that's how it needs to be approached rather than.
Yeah, I think that's true in the sense that, I mean, one of the things that he's probably trying to get at is that we sometimes make the crucifixion of Jesus a really individualized thing. Mm. You know, we kind of make our faith based on Jesus died for my sins. And in a sense, like, part of the big picture is that Jesus died for this grand view of, like, restoration of the whole world.
Yeah.
So we kind of need to, in some ways, go back to that personal, in other ways, develop a bigger picture, like it goes beyond me. But yeah, if you're listening and you're interested in these things, definitely, at the center of Christian faith, you know, you can sometimes hear a lot of noise around different issues, but at the center of it is, you know, is Jesus who he said he was? Did he do what the Bible says he did?
Yeah.
And if so, then yeah, a lot of the other stuff will fall into place around that.
So just read a gospel.
Yeah.
Don't go on Facebook and get in arguments. Just please just read a gospel. And then come and
then
questions.
Read N.T. Wright's book about what it actually means, maybe.
Yeah.
Is that step two? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. If you read the Gospels in the Bible, then normally.
I think, like, what I benefit from someone like N.T. Wright, because, again, if you're someone listening who does not have a Christian faith, and we want you to feel, welcome into the conversation, but one of the things that would make me skeptical if I didn't have faith is how Christians can have a tendency to say some stuff which to them sounds normal, to us sounds normal. But if you're on the other side, you'd go, well, that just seems crazy.
Yeah.
That God would be killed or that, all that kind of stuff. So, the benefit of somebody like N.T. Wright is he restores complexity where sometimes we make things 2D. So, if you're like, man, this, what I've heard seems to like be superficial or lack depth, then there are some guys out there that can really help to restore.
Do you think that a non-believer could read this book and sort of get something out of it, or is it a bit of a step after?
I would say that his target market is to help Christians reframe their understanding, which in a way would change the way that we speak to other people about it.
Yeah.
Do you know, that would be the hope, that as you regain an understanding of the revolutionary nature, because that's the whole idea, is that actually the crucifixion of Jesus set off a revolution where all people are then invited to be a part of the new heavens and new earth and restoring all things and, you know, living crazy lives of generosity and compassion and you know, radical love. Yeah, I guess to recapture, like we sort of respond to the crucifixion differently. We go, hooray, Jesus has forgiven my sins and one day I'll go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Whereas really the idea would be that we would respond to Jesus' crucifixion and resurrection by going, my life right now in this place should look radically transformed by this.
Yeah.
Jabs has kindly brought some cookies, which we are eating, and we're going to discuss creativity.
Mm.
I mean, it was a creative act, whoever put these together, right?
Mm.
But white, can I ask you, cranberry. John Blah, how do you understand creativity? You know, what do you think when people say things like, I'm not creative, or you're a particularly creative person? What do you think of those kind of, that understanding?
Yeah, that's a question that I've often been broached with. My wife, for instance, is always telling me how she's not creative, you know, she's a beauty therapist and a hairdresser, which both of those jobs take actually quite a bit of creativity. And it's about, your creativity comes out in things that you're passionate about. So she's organising her 30th birthday party, for instance. That's quite, there's a lot of creative things in that process that she really enjoys doing. She enjoys doing makeup on someone to, you know, to make them feel good about themselves, to go out or whatever. And these are all creative things, and just because it isn't music or, you know, poetry or painting or something that's the people that society looks at as that's a creative task, doesn't mean you're not a creative person. Everybody is creative. And actually, Mystery, who's one of the guys that started Crosswords, which is the hip-hop ministry we're involved in a little bit, me and Will, There's a great. Have you seen the short film that Bella produced? So there's a short film that was like a short documentary that was made about him. That someone called Bella, who's a film director who's involved with Crosswords as well. She's just won awards for it and stuff. It's up online. You can post the link or something. It's called The Godfather of Sydney Graff or something like that. Matt says in that, and I've heard him say a number of times, that we're made by a creator who is creative and we're made in his likeness. Therefore, we are creative as well. He's made us to be creative and to, within his creation, continue to create, you know.
Yeah.
And for his glory as well. I mean, a lot of creative things aren't necessarily directly for his glory, but it's contributing to the creation of the world and all these things. So, When people say they're not creative, I think they just need to find what they're passionate about, which will actually draw their creativity out. Like, not everyone's going to be creatively driven to write a song if that's not what they're into. If they don't,
I think that partly comes from people feel like they're not creative because we probably have a fairly narrow idea of what creativity is. That it's you know, in the world of music, painting and writing fiction or something. You know, we have this narrow idea of creativity. Nathan, how do you think about creativity? Like, do you have kind of a working definition in your mind of what makes something creative?
What I would say creativity is, and...
It would have been cool if you said, well, I'm not really a creative person.
There's sort of a variety of views on what creativity is, but I think fundamentally creativity is the process of making order out of chaos. So we take things that are chaotic in the world and in general.
That's good, Nathan.
The world itself is incredibly chaotic, way more so than what you actually perceive it is. Like, at a fundamental level, it's just particles moving around, random fluctuations, and it's just really chaotic. And then the process of creativity is creating order out of that. So even just your ability to look at something and go, that is a laptop, and not just like billions of particles with no distinction of objects. Like, your ability to distinguish objects from each other is a creative process already.
Mm.
Mm.
So that can give you a very broad version of creativity, which then is not necessarily all that useful for what we talk about, maybe more specifically when we think of creativity. But I think you can definitely also go too narrow and be like, creativity is just like fine art stuff like painting or music writing or something. And that's also, I think that's too narrow as well. I think what we need to try and get is sort of a middle ground, sort of, where we don't just go, well, everything you do is creativity, because that's not very descriptive.
Mm.
And I think it's also not helpful to be like, only these few specific things are creativity.
Yeah.
But I think the type of creativity that we want to be putting forward is a creativity that is doing the creating order out of chaos, but creating new forms of order out of that chaos. So that could be creating new music, or it could be creating new artworks, but it could also be creating in your family. It could be creating in whatever type of job you do, creating events, creating software development, creating your social life. Yeah. There's so many types of things that you can be creative about. And I think it's also about the intentionality of that as well, in that you can sort of, some forms of creativity you can just sort of passively create, like, oh, like you're sort of making some order out of chaos by just passively observing the world. But I think that intentionality has a lot to do with it as well, and being really intentional about, I'm not just going to consume things, but I'm actually going to create things with what I have.
What do you think about, open question to both of you, I really like your definition there, and I often talk to people about creativity as arranging things in a new way. Mm. So, and I talk about, like there's only 12 musical notes, so you don't actually create new notes, you just rearrange the 12 in a new way. There's only 3 primary colors, you're not making up colors, but when you're being creative, you're arranging those colors on a canvas in a new way.
That's not quite how music or color works, but it's close enough.
Well, how is it not?
Well, I mean, you're saying that there's only 12 musical notes. Well, you've got sound is just a addition of multiple sine waves that can be at different frequencies. And yeah, you've got a whole variety of, like, you've got like
12 almost musical notes range of frequencies in the standard scale, and I don't recognize there are different scales. So yes, there is complexity there.
He's a rapper too, so understand. He's more focused on the words.
Yeah.
And like a note played on different instruments, like, sounds differently because it's got other. It's not a pure sine wave. It's not a single.
Yeah. Well, I would say that in itself is that's part of the. That's a new way of arranging it. Hey, we've discovered that there are, this note sounds like this when you play it on a string, and it sounds like this when you hit a piece of ivory.
And you'll find that there's more than 3 colors. Like, that 3 primary colors is because our eyes kind of perceive 3 particular frequencies approximately as 3 different colors, and you can sort of add them together and get color, there's actually more color than that as well.
Well, there's like huge shade, but I mean,
there's more frequencies of color, even frequencies you can't see.
Yeah. Do you think it's useful though, for the sake of everyday language? Like, if we got rid of the concept of primary colors, we talked about labels and things before. Like, there's some use in that. Like, it's a tool that helps us to understand. Okay.
And if you take the 3 primary colors and you have them in paint or something, or if you're on a computer display, you are still limited to the color that you can represent that people could see. Like a display for a computer of some sort, there is a limit to the color that it can display. It can't display all the different colors. Normally you can't do like fluorescent things so much. Like, you'll never see a fluorescent pink on your display.
Well, the number doesn't really matter. The point is, you can't invent a sound or a color that doesn't already exist.
Mm-hmm. You've got to use what there already is.
You've got to use what there already is. And there are even limitations within what you can use, because some of it we can't perceive. So that just is a little bit mind-blowing.
Mm.
But in using what there is, like, there's only one, we would say there's only one who's ever created something out of nothing.
Yeah.
And the rest of us work within the infinite something to arrange it in new ways. But, you know, that sort of bringing order out of chaos, beautiful way of describing it. I love it. Can you create something that brings destruction? I mean, can people use their God-given creativity to make things that end up, you know, you just talked about intentionality. So you could intentionally create something beautiful. Could someone not intentionally create something destructive? Like, let's take a nuclear bomb. Very creative to make such a thing. And yet it has, by its nature, the capacity to create chaos.
Yeah. But, yeah, the chaos sort of is the default state of the world, that if you're not actively creating order, chaos is what you'll get. And so, yeah, I guess creating a nuclear bomb is a very creative thing to do. And if you set that bomb off somewhere that it's going to destroy stuff, then you're sort of doing something intentional that kind of just reverts the world back to a more chaotic state.
Yeah, I think that in itself is interesting, right? Because with our creativity, we can move things forward, or we can use our creativity to move things backwards. It's like a scary thought in a way.
Yeah, I mean, the creation of a bomb and the engineering that goes behind that, that's the creative part of it. Actually, dropping it and seeing what it does, I wouldn't call that creative. That is sort of... The result of that does just destroy. It doesn't really create anything. You're not intentionally knowing what you want it to do. You don't have sort of a vision of where you want it to be. It's like you build a sandcastle, someone coming over and just knocking over the whole sandcastle. That's not creative.
Right.
It's more just being active in the reverting back to the chaos that was there previously.
Yeah, so creativity. You could say that in a way, like that's partly what we do. Like God's created, you know, you use a sandcastle picture, like he's created this beautiful thing, and where we have the opportunity to like observe it and, you know, be blown away by it, often we come in and like wipe out that forest or, you know, like pollute that ocean or...
Totally, There must be some theory behind create or destroy. I know there's some actual like Ableton remixing course called create and destroy or something, in terms of just, you know, do what you want with this program. But
I often think of the opposite of being creative, not so much as destroying, but it being consuming. And because I think I find that to be an interesting way of thinking about it, in that for myself, when I'm not being creative, I tend to be just consuming things. And consuming things is sort of just when you take the things that are ordered and whatnot and just use them up for whatever purpose, and what you're left over with is just more chaotic.
Like your input.
You didn't really...
rather than output.
Yeah, where it's more about you just taking the input and just throwing... and what's left over, you just kind of throw it out to trash.
Well, input, I mean, if you're talking... I remember from... this is probably simplifying stuff that you know about. Learning computer stuff back in school was input, process, output, which I think actually to create at a high level or at a focused level in terms of a subject area, you need to consume a lot in terms of what that is. Like, you need to listen to a lot of music if you're going to make music. You need to read a lot of books if you're going to write books. You need to listen to a lot of podcasts if you're going to make a podcast, you know? At least to do it well.
Yes.
And you need to process them, and then you output. So I think you do need to have influence in you, and you need to consume things. But if those things are not good things, then I think...
And if you don't, you need all of those things. Like if you're consuming but not creating, then it's like the input just gets like full and clogged, and you know, like... And if you're creating without consuming, then you kind of have nothing to create from. You need to have some materials and some understanding and some skill to be able to express that. So,
I think often with the consuming is that you can consume things to then create out of that. But often I find our culture, I think in general, is very focused on, we'll just like consume TV shows
and definitely
music and all that stuff and that type of things, and we don't really do it in a mindset that's like, oh, I'm going to create something out of that. It's just like, I want to watch a movie and I want to have the new piece of technology.
Yeah.
And it's not about, yeah, it's not about like, oh,
limiting, self-limiting that stuff is something that most of us don't think about, but actually can increase, you know, it's going to sort of, we've sort of naturally got there a little bit, but to talk about how do we increase our creativity.
Mm.
And some of that comes from actually, limiting consumption and recognizing that you do need to read stuff and everything, but if you kind of don't ever let things float to the surface, like one of the most creative, or one of the things you can do which will help your creative process is just go for a walk, because you're actually, by doing something rhythmic but not really mentally engaging, a lot of that content, a lot of those discussions, a lot of those things that have been stewing around in the background of your life come to the surface.
Mm. And it's the concept of being bored.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Which I think we've spoken about briefly as well. In the whole, you need your mind to sort of reset, and with all the chaos that goes on in your mind, start to actually, you know, I think it's, there's been studies that it's sort of talking about it. It starts connecting things and connecting thoughts and start putting things in order. A bit of a, what was it called? Nathan, you'd know. Is it like a defrag of your hard drive? That was like a thing that I felt like you used to have to do to your computer. I've never had to do it in a long time.
Yeah, I think they normally just do it automatically in the background these days.
But like a defrag of your hard drive, it's like it's sort of putting things in order that you've been, that like thoughts that you've got coming around, so that then you've got something to actually move with. So, going for a walk or, I mean, doing exercise, I think, is a really good thing to sort of get your, apart from health and well-being, it's a good thing where you're not, and, you know, not necessarily doing exercise while listening to music, like not consuming anything, just switching off and just letting you be alone with your thoughts and
stuff like that. It takes a discipline because particularly nowadays you can, everything you're doing, like I typically listen to podcasts while I'm doing dishes, which is great because it makes doing dishes a little more exciting.
Yeah.
But I get to a point where I go, doing the dishes is one of the few spaces in my life previously where I would have been forced to just be thoughtful and kind of zone out.
Yeah.
But not zone out like you do when you watch TV. Zone out in a way where you're like, I'm, you know, verging on bored here. So I kind of go, well, it's okay to listen to podcasts while I'm doing that.
Yeah.
But maybe every couple of times I should just do the the residual domestic task.
Yeah.
And
that's good. I mean, I have like a drive to work that I listen to podcasts in, and that's why I said, like, I can't listen to your podcast all the time because sometimes I need to switch off. Whether that means listening to a podcast that I don't have to think about, I'm just sort of hearing stuff and not it's not provoke any thought. Or just chuck music on that I don't have to listen to every word.
Yeah.
But I rarely go silent while driving.
Yeah.
But
I've gone like silent while driving like a couple of times. Like you just turn your radio off completely and you just have it silent. It's kind of weird. Especially when you're just driving by yourself and you're just like, I'm just used to there always being something. Like I'll just always have at least the radio on while driving, often a podcast or music. And
just for the sake of it a lot of the time,
But if you just turn it all off, it's like now it's just, you just focus on the driving and...
Well, maybe that's our maybe that's our take home tip for, I mean, we could talk all day about different ways to fuel the creative process or find inspiration, but it, you know, I think one thing is probably to create some more space in your life, to create some more, boredom. Yeah. And you know, there's a lot of good material out there around that. We do probably have to bring this conversation to a close. Even though I feel like it could go so many places, but how about maybe we each just want to share, a thought around creativity and spirituality, creativity and faith, something either that you've learnt or that you would want to share. Start with Jabs.
I think a final thought for me would be something that I've noticed a lot over the last couple of years, which where I've had a bit less time. But I'm still creating things because I love to do it. And, you know, experience with MAD, for instance, where I guess we'd be working with kids who didn't feel they could create something, but in giving them an opportunity with something that they love and sort of giving them the resources in order to do it, they would. But it's because they love that thing that they'll actually do it. And from the book, Austin Kleon's Still Like an Artist book, where he's talking a lot about creativity, he gets the concept of an amateur, which the word amateur actually comes from lover, like lover of something, rather than someone that does something for free. It's not necessarily whether they do it for free or for money. It's that they do it for the love and because they love it.
Yeah, wow.
Which is, it's like a definition of the word that no one really, that it's totally changed in society. So unless you love something and you really, you love it enough to, I guess, consume a lot of it, you're not going to, it's not about your skill and whether you're talented enough to do it or creative enough to do it. If you don't love that enough, like for, I think of someone that's like, oh, I wish I could write a rap song or this and that. I'm like, well, if you listen to enough rap song because you loved it, or you listen to hip hop and you spent time writing until you wrote something good, you would be good at it. It's that 10,000 hours.
Yeah.
But you're not going to spend those 10,000 hours on something that you don't love. Like, don't go to uni and study something you hate, because chances are you won't actually get through it. Like, study something you love, engage with something you love enough, and then that's where your creativity will be, you know? It's I think God blesses us not with skills for certain things. I think he gives us passion for certain things, like a passion for creativity or a passion for music, or
and then we need to develop that, which leads to the skilling. Yeah. And you start with,
and I think realizing within you what it is that you do love, which I think at MAD it is trying to get kids to use what they love in a productive way, in a positive way. If you don't know what that is, then I think you need to work that out. You know, be amateurs.
My last suggestion is think about something that you could do in your life in the next week that is different from what you would normally do. It can be something like really simple, like drive a roundabout way to get somewhere just for the sake of it. Or it could be something really big, like write a song. But do something that takes some amount of intentionality and that is different from what you would do if it wasn't done intentionally.
That's cool. I'm going to listen to both of these pieces of advice, reflect on what I love, do something differently. I think my advice would be sort of around the idea that it goes back to my review of N.T. Wright's book, but like God created and then didn't leave things to just be hung in a gallery, so to speak, but created something that would then have an ongoing continued creation. And it's weird to think, like Nathan said, that there's this state of chaos around us, and yet your life, you know, there's chaos in your neighborhood, there's potentially chaos in your home, it's probably chaos in your life, it's chaos in mine. And yet part of the act of creativity is taking those things by the hands and or by the brush or by the guitar or whatever, and moving them in a different direction, moving things that are moving towards further division or further conflict, moving them towards, you know, greater beauty or greater harmony. So, yeah, whether you do that with food, whether you do that with music, whether you do that with software, be someone who helps to move things in the direction that God, you know, had set up so that we would participate in the ongoing creative process. So a lot there to unpack. If you're just looking for a car trip to zone out in, maybe listen to Jabs' podcast instead. Time and Motion cardio sessions.
Yeah. Although that can get deep too. Don't zone out, like, listen to it intently.
Yeah, well, especially when Will Small's on there. There's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, it's a dream come true, guys. Long time listener, first time guest. It's amazing.
So good.
Yeah.